seems too much. When you feel totally out of touch, hope is seeping out the door. You find yourself curled on the floor. The thoughts swirl round, all jumbled and messed. Why is this brain so darkly obsessed? I've secrets I've never confessed, haven't told a soul. Gentle whisper through the pain. Remember rainbows follow rain. Breathe deeply, hold on tight. Your hope will return, shining bright. Embrace the now, release the past. In forgiveness, peace will last. Let your strength be shown.
Hello there. It's good to be back. I'm Elaine Lindsay. This is Suicide Zen Forgiveness. And today I have a very lovely guest. I'll tell you in all honesty, Jennifer and I have already been talking for half an hour. This is Jennifer Rogers. Please welcome her with open arms. Jennifer and I met, I think, a little over a month ago. And it's like we've been friends forever. I see something by Jennifer or whatever, and I think, oh, Jennifer might like that. And it's so bizarre. It's one thing to say that happens. It's another thing when it happens. And I still have friends from 50 years ago that were those kind of friends. So for me, that's just an amazing gift. So welcome, gift.
You are so welcome for my presence.
Yay!
And thank you in return.
Oh, yeah, it's just been absolutely lovely meeting you. And yeah, we probably, if we hadn't remembered that we got to record it, we would still be talking later tonight, I think.
I agree. Yeah. And we may send some Marco Polos after the recording.
Yes, there you go. So as per usual, we are going to let Jennifer give us a little bit of a look into who she is and what she does now before we go ahead and get into her story. I just want to say off the bat, I'll have everything below in our show notes. And we will have a link for you later as well, so that you too can connect with Jennifer. On that note, I'm just going to say, go ahead and give us a little bit of information about you. Yukio Wellness is your company. I just want to practice that name, but yeah. I'll let you take it from there.
Yes, thank you. You said it perfectly, so no practice needed. You've got it, Yukio Wellness. I am a Usui and Karuna Reiki master, and if I could just do Reiki all day long, that is my passion, whether it's in person or distance or virtual, as you may have heard it before. But the piece that really speaks to me starts with the name Yukio, because a lot of people may question, what is Reiki? How can it help me? How does it work if we're not even in the same space? And energy is transferable no matter where we are. And I love being the first person to introduce someone to Reiki. And so when I was thinking of a name for my business, I really spent some time internalizing, what is it that I want to deliver? What is it that I want others to experience with me? And so going back and paying homage to the Japanese culture, because that's where Reiki is coming from, I dove in and found the word Yukio. And if you're familiar with Japanese art, it is actually the floating world. So you can see as above, so below, that type of thing. So it is an art form, right? So definitely. But there's an extension of that, and it's the extension that resonated with me. And the extension of Yukio is living in the moment and detached from the bothers of life. And that's what I know my clients experience when they're with me, that they can let everything else go and just focus on themselves for that time.
Then that is even more appropriate to have you here, because since, I don't know, I think 2004, if you go back to my signatures, it says live in the moment.
Oh, yeah.
It was when I first started working with, my son calls her the holistic missile. She was my spiritual mentor, and she got me to believe and live in the moment, because in essence, it's all we have.
That is true. And we get to decide what that moment is.
That choice is absolutely, that choice, I think, is everything. So I gotta ask, what led you to Reiki?
So like many, Reiki fell in my lap. And once I was introduced to it, it was, and I've said this and I've actually written this in a contributing book that I've helped author, that it was the missing piece, and it's now my piece, P-E-A-C-E.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yes. And so it was an invitation from my mother-in-law that, hey, my friend is a Reiki master and she's holding this course. Would you like to go with me? And absolutely, we went, and it was always wonderful and is wonderful to spend time with my mother-in-law. And so we ended up being the only students in class that day. And from the moment I walked in and then was given the training material and then go through the attunement process, it's, I've always known this. I've always had this part of me. I just didn't know what it was called, and I didn't quite know what to do with it. And that's why I've said it was the missing piece, and it's my piece.
Well, in all honesty, I think every person that I've heard, like how they came to Reiki, it's not, oh, I want to be a veterinarian, or I want to be a brain surgeon, or I want to be a dancer, or what have you. It is something that finds you.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Wow. That is very cool. So how long have you been practicing now?
I am going into my fourth year.
Wow. Wow.
So it was, I was all in. There was no, if Reiki was for sale, I was over buying. I was all in from that first day. And so the first day was a really long day because it was level one and two attunements.
Oh, wow.
And it was come back. And as you're level two attuned, you have that 21 day of self-care and self-practice. And there was a lot going on during that time because you have to be dedicated to be successful at anything. And then if it's something that's going to benefit your health, you really have to be dedicated. Even on the days that you don't want to get up, day 14, day 17, and you're like, oh, how many more days do I have to do this? But it wasn't that for me. Every day I was like, oh, today I get to work on this part, or today I get to try this or whatever. And then I moved, and the community I moved from, there wasn't many who practiced Reiki. And so I moved. Now I live in Norman, Oklahoma, and there is a whole community. And I've actually found my soul sisters and soul brothers in this same path. And they were Reiki masters, and I was not interested at the time in becoming a Reiki master. I felt confident in doing at my level what I could do. But I read something about Karuna Reiki.
Ah.
Okay, I want to go further, because Karuna Reiki heals at the cellular level, and it heals. So you're talking about, we can even help heal Earth. We can heal past traumas. We can help heal relationships. There's so much that it can do. And I thought, wow, I'm already seeing some of that with my clients that are coming in. How great would it be to offer this extension for them? But the caveat is, to become Karuna Reiki Master, you have to be a Reiki Master already. So I go back, because I'm a loyal person to my core, I go back to my Reiki Master and I ask if she would attune me to Master level. And she was not interested in doing the Reiki Master teacher at that point. So once I had her blessing that it was okay to go to a different instructor, then I went to a different master and become Yusui Master, worked in that, and then about a year later went into Karuna Reiki.
Wow. And
it is, it's a beautiful gift, honestly.
That, God, that is just incredible. And yeah, I don't know enough about Karuna. I'm going to have to find out more now. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So does that mean you had to go back and become a master of Yusui?
I did have to become a Yusui master first.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's, I didn't realize. So you're a master in two forms.
I am.
That's a lot of attunement. That's a lot of studying. And wow, part of me is jelly.
No,
in a good way.
Yeah.
Jelly that you've assimilated all this knowledge. Because knowledge is like the best chocolate in the world.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And to go with your analogy of chocolate, when I work with clients, what do they need? Are they a white chocolate type of service? Are they milk? Are they dark? Do they like cookies and cream? Do they want it in a bar? Do they want it melted like a topping? And so that's just part of what I do. You've worked with clients, Elaine, you know how it is. You have all these tools, but you may only need one or two to get through the situation. And so it depends on what we're working on, whether we're going into Yusui or to Karuna, or maybe I'm using some of both symbols.
That's what I was wondering, because quite often it's something that people don't always understand about what I consider the esoteric arts.
Yes.
You tend to pull from what you need to meet the client where they are. And I think it's wonderful, because to me, in a way, it's very sad. Western medicine does not have the same, leeway is not the word I'm looking for, but they don't have the same ability to interweave the pieces that you need.
Correct.
Which I think is probably why it's lacking and needs all the older wisdoms and all of these things, because it does not have that. The word really is flexibility.
Ability, and again, speaking intention, speaking, I think the most common word you will hear is intuitively, feeling that mind gut. But it goes deeper than that for me, especially in a distance session, because I will ask, let's say it's your first session with me, we're going to have a phone call first, and there's a series of questions I'm going to ask, but I don't need, nor do I want to know everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Because I'm connecting with you energetically, and your energy is going to share with me what you need in that moment. After that first session, we move into session two and beyond. I don't call you prior to the session. And in distance, it's not like we're recording, doing Zoom or anything virtual like this. It literally is a block of time. Elaine, you have a session with me and your time is from 10 to 10:30. then at 10 o'clock in your space, wherever you're going to be sitting, you're going to be lying, you're going to listen to music, you're going to have, if you want to cover with a blanket, whatever you're comfortable doing in your space is what you will be doing. I simply ask you to be present in that time. And then on my side, I work in my Reiki room just as if you were here with me from start to finish. And it's amazing because I can confidently say today that I am clairvoyant. And so I will receive this information. There may be times that I hear something. There may be times that a picture or a partial picture comes up. Most recent example was a session last week. And I take notes during the session because I'm not going to remember everything that comes or goes. And so after your session, so for example, yours was 10 to 10:30. I call you at 10:31. I call you 1 minute after session. And then I share with you all of my notes first because I don't want you or any other client to ever feel like I'm just repeating something that you've said. Yeah. And so in this session last week, I literally wrote down on this person's page, I am worthy. And she comes back and she says, you couldn't have known that. How do you know that? This is wild. She said, I actually said that out loud twice during our session.
Wow.
And so it's just those things. And
confirmation.
It's confirmation, not just for me, but for you.
For her. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm there to support you on your path. I don't call myself a healer. I provide space for you to do your own healing. And then I can see things from a different perspective.
Oh, that was so beautifully said, Jennifer. That was just absolutely perfect. A quick aside, I always worked in digital. So I worked in search engine optimization and social media and websites and all of that. And for a number of years, I couldn't tell people that an awful lot of what I do, people would call
correct.
Because in order for people to be visible online, you have to be congruent within yourself and ready to be seen.
Yes.
And knowing that and being able to share that with the client when you're not in one of the Eastern modalities is a little bit harder. And finally, I guess in 2016, I decided, oh, enough already. We're just going to tell people exactly what it is that I do because it's different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and that different makes the connection.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's about the patient, the client. It's all about them. And nothing I could do, nothing optimization could do, nothing about social media or their website could do anything unless they got congruent and ready to be seen.
Yes.
So in that same way, it is all about the client taking the onus for themselves. Mm-hmm. Wow. I knew they were, everything was interwoven. I'm forever doing this when I'm talking. It's, you know, a big part of, I think, what an awful lot of us do when you talk about these arts, and even in the creative arts, although some people don't realize that is what they're doing for people, is bringing out these inner pieces. Now let's switch gears and let's talk about Jennifer.
Let's talk. What would you like to know?
You know what this podcast is all about. Our audience knows what it's all about. We cover everything from suicide, loss, ideation, to mental health, anxiety, depression, and everything in between.
Yes.
So we're going to hand it over to you now. You can let us know what you'd like us to know and start wherever you want.
I appreciate you. Thank you for offering this space. And I will say that my story goes back to the age of 4. So many moons ago, 41 of them actually. So it's been quite a ride in those 41 years to age 45 today. But at 4 years old, I was first approached in my bedroom in the middle of the night by a family member or a step family at that time, waking me up with his hand between my legs, asking me if I needed to use the restroom. And now at 4 years old, I was potty trained, so I didn't need help using the bathroom. And I knew this is not the signs for using the restroom, right? So that was the first time that someone had come into my bedroom. Moving up to age 5, the stepfather I had at the time started molesting me. And that was a whole different fear, a whole different scenario than just someone coming in one time.
Yeah.
And this goes on. The abuse gets worse, gets deeper, gets more frequent. And it's not just the physical abuse, the sexual abuse, but it's the emotional and the mental abuse as well. Because at 5 years old, you are locked inside this tiny brain that is looking at an adult who should be caring for you. And these are the things that are happening. And then you're told the most horrendous things that if you tell anyone will happen to you or to your family. But guess what? You still have to get up every day and you still have to go to school and you still have to have this normal life, right? But nobody understood why the little girl in the corner didn't want to play with anyone, didn't trust anyone, and just preferred to be by herself. Because there was battles and secrets that nobody knew I was fighting. And I walked that path until I was 8 years old. And when I woke up at 8 years old, my body had developed an infection. And at 8, your body cannot battle that. Body has a hard time battling those things anyway. But definitely at 8 years old, this was not something that I could keep in silence or keep locked away in the back of my mind any longer. And so I came down the stairs that morning. We had one vehicle. He had taken it to work. We had no phone. So as I come down the stairs and I share with my mom everything that's been going on, the only option she has in that moment is to go to the neighbor's house to use their phone. So everything that I've just shared with her, she now says out loud in front of our neighbor, in front of my little brother, in front of the little one little friend I had that I could play with. So now you just feel this heavy and this burden. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So the police come. Now this is back in 1988. So things work much differently today than they do then or did then. So the police come, pick us up. They take me to the hospital in Elaine. I can tell you today, the pants and the sweater that I had on, yeah, as if this just happened yesterday to me.
Yeah.
And for those of us that have been through this, when there is a sexual assault exam done, it is not kind.
No.
Not gentle. It is not that warm motherly approach that we long for. It is cold and it's sterile, right?
Yeah.
So I still remember the sound and the feel of those scissors cutting my pants off my legs, that crunch and that cold glide. So I go through my exam. Everything is confirmed. But instead of removing me from the home, the police department takes me right back in the car, my mother right back in the car, my brother right back in the car, to our home. Right back into the mouth of the monster.
I'm sorry, I can't even imagine.
And at me at 8, I'm thinking I'm out of here. Like somebody knows this is happening. And so we lived in what I thought was the most beautiful home. It was a beautiful two-story home, Up the stairs was nothing but bedrooms, so I had the best bedroom, and we moved to a smaller two-bedroom home with one bathroom in between the bedrooms. But my mother stayed with him. So abuse doesn't stop. It changes. And so things change. And I go to school. And I remember coming home that day and I had my little backpack on. And you know how it is, second grade, the backpacks are always so much bigger than the little bodies. So I have this backpack on. And as I come down the alley, my home is here to the left. And I notice that our car is gone. And that is the first time I heard a voice that was not mine and simply said, "Do not go home. He is there." I didn't question that voice, Elaine. I leaned in and I fully trusted. And instead of turning left to cross the street to go home, I went right and I ran away. And at 8 years old, I ran just over a mile, which for any child, that's quite a distance.
Yeah.
And I go to my mom's friend's house and I knock on the door. She answers the door and there I stand with my backpack and sweat coming down the face. And she said, "Jennifer, what are you doing here?" And I tell her everything. And she says, "Come inside, come help me." Because my only request was, please call my grandmother. Just call my Nana, she'll know what to do. She says, "Come inside. I'm replanting some of my plants. Why don't you help me?" And so we sat on her kitchen floor with these little styrofoam cups and we're playing in the dirt and things. And she does. She calls my grandmother and we're sitting there probably an hour or so. And there comes a knock on the door. My grandmother's more than 2 hours away, so we know it's not her.
Yeah.
So she picks me up, picks my backpack up in one swoop and just hugs me to her chest. And she says, "I'm putting you in the closet. Don't say anything. Don't come out." And she does. She places me in the closet and shuts the door. She goes to her front door, answers it, and it's my mom. And I can hear my mom. I can hear the concern. I can hear the worry in her voice, the trembling. And she says, "We can't find Jennifer. She went to school today, but she didn't come home." And so now I'm in this closet and I thought, what have I done?
Oh my God.
I've just scared my mother. I've got to get up. I've got to get out of here. Because as a child, what do? You obey your parents.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there frozen in that moment because I don't know. And I hear Tina say, "I have her and you're not getting her back." And Elaine, that was a weight lifted because in that moment, I felt heard. Someone finally listened to me. Someone is going to do something. So my grandmother comes. I go live with her. My brother and I both go live with her for just over a year. And in that time, court proceedings happen. And again, this is 1988. So there is a charge. There is minimal jail time. But at the time, there was no such thing as sex offender registry. It comes out in 1989. And they do not grandfather any cases.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine that workload had they done that?
Yeah.
So I can see the logistics and the legality things that they would have had. But my case was 1 year from being. So my offender in that case never has to register for my case. Now you can pull his records and you can see the charge, but there's no registry for him. So a year later, we're with our grandparents, we go back to our mother. My mother, like many mothers who were young, she was barely 16 when she had me, was very dependent on that companionship of a man. And so we went right from grandparents into mom.
Oh no.
New man. So now I'm just over 9 years old. We move in over Christmas break of going third grade year. And so I have another new stepdad, right? So stepdad number two. Things are great the first 2 years. Everything is fine. It's not my grandparents. It's not where I felt safe, but it was okay. Nothing was happening to me until about the age of 11. And then around 11, my body starts changing, starts developing. And do you want to learn how to drive? If you want to drive the car, you'll let me touch you here, or you'll let me do these things. And so I felt just bombarded again and just closed in. And these aren't things that you're going to school and you're sharing with your girlfriends. You're not sharing these things to your school counselor. Because why? It's their shame around it. There's guilt around it. But I didn't.
That's what he's counting on.
That's what he's counting on. But the crazy thing with me is I never felt guilt or shame. I knew from 5 years on, this was not right. This is weird. Families don't do this to each other. But I'm locked in because I'm a child. What power do I have at that young of an age? So here I go again. And on my mother's birthday, so this is, I haven't been back with her but a few years. On her birthday that year, I wrote a note and I stuck it under her pillow and said, this is what's happening. I didn't know how to say it again. Because this is happening again. Like, how does this happen again?
Yeah.
And I wasn't met with that comfort. I wasn't met with protection. I was met with, are you lying? Are you serious? It was stand up for the husband.
Oh my God.
So you have, now I'm like, what do I do? My thing was, my biological dad was still alive. He was still around. And I thought, I just want to be with him. Just to my dad. And so it came my mother's rule that when you turn 14, you can move in with your father. So I'm about to turn 12. So I'm like, okay, 2 more years.
Oh my God.
This was her rule. But what do you know at 12? You don't know anything. You don't know what the court says. And my dad wasn't fighting against her like that. He was appreciative of whatever time he got with us.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have it counted down, 14, I get to move in with my dad. The next few years go along, he lives with my grandmother, takes care of my grandmother. They actually bought a house in town, had a bedroom set up ready for me to go. So I'll be moving in August of 1994. Got it on the calendar. I know what new school I'm going to go to. Everything is starting to see that light, right? April 22nd. 1994, 4 months and 4 months and 9 days before I'm to move in, my father is killed in an auto pedestrian accident.
Oh my God.
And at that moment, Elaine, I was done. Completely checked out. Yeah. Done. Because that was my out. That was my way. He was preparing for me. I was preparing for him. I'm not going to have to live through this again. Here we go. And so it just felt like at every point, the light was taken away. Or it's like somebody opened the door to show you.
And then slammed
it. Turned the light off and slammed it shut. So it created in me this feeling of mistrust. One, huge mistrust for women, huge mistrust for girlfriends. I can't trust you. I can't. Are you going to do what you say you're going to do? Is this going to come around? Is this? So I wasn't really out there like that in high school. I had one or two close friends, and that's all I was comfortable with letting in. I wasn't comfortable sharing anything about me. Because we know how cruel school can be.
Oh, yeah.
Could you imagine being that girl who is not once, but twice molested and raped by her stepfathers? That stigma that follows. So here you go. You've got all these things working against you. And I thought, I'm out of this. So the summer that my father is killed in 1994, the summer of 95, and my mother is still with this stepfather. The summer of 95, she asked my grandparents if my brother and I can come stay with them for the summer. And so I thought, oh, I'm going to get a break. So
yeah,
I'm going to have a break. And before I would feel so guilty about this, but today it was my saving grace. And my cousin and I, she was 3 years older than me, so I was just 15. She was 18, or I was turning 15, go into Walmart. And what in the world we were thinking, I can't tell you. But we decided we were going to steal a $4 pair of boxer shorts. They were so cute, had Dalmatians on them. And I had the money, but it was just that, can we get away with it type thing? Because I never was the rule breaker or anything like that. But typical Jennifer, I got scared, right? And so we took the shorts out of the bag and we actually put them back on the grocery shelf of Walmart. We found out later, Walmart grocery did not have cameras. So while they saw us put it in the bag, they never saw us put it back.
Oh, take it out.
Never saw us take it out. So as soon as we walked out of the door, they snatched us back up, right to the back. And they're telling us, oh, we've got you on video. We've got you, Jennifer, putting the shorts in the bag. And I was like, no, you don't. I didn't put them in the bag. I took them out of the bag. And they keep on with me. And I'm pressing back. And I'm like, show me the video because you're wrong. You'll see her put them in. I can take you to the shelf over here where they are. It doesn't matter. It was the intent. And we've said that in your podcast today. What's our intent?
Yeah.
So it was the intent. So 15 years old, get arrested, put me in handcuffs, walk me through Walmart. Walk me through Walmart. One of my girlfriends is in Walmart when this happens and actually walks up to me because the officer's walking a few steps behind. And I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, because my hands are behind my back.
Oh my God.
So here we go. But I did wrong. I'm paying the consequences. So I'm charged with aiding and abetting in petty theft. That's my charge. And because I've never been in trouble before, I have to go to this program called First Offenders. So automatically, we're sticking labels on things.
Yeah.
So I'm an offender now, and I have to go do this. On top of the wrath of my grandma and grandpa, I was grounded. I better ask if I can even take a breath at this point.
Yeah.
And so I go to First Offenders, but part of that program required us to do individual counseling, group counseling with others in the group, and then family counseling. And it was through our individual and our family counseling that I was connected with the best lady. And I was able to finally share everything that had gone on from 4 up until present and just get that out. And she says, let me be clear, your mother is still with your second stepfather. And I said, today, yes. And so it was through that program and that counselor that I was not allowed to go back to my mother unless she divorced him. And so that's what kicked into gear me never going back to her. And I didn't. And once I did not return to her, our relationship was nearly severed. I didn't see her as a mom. I didn't need her for anything. Those needs were now being met by my grandmother. Everything's being taken care of. Didn't have much to do with her. And this went on for years. And my daughter today is 26 years old. I can count on one hand the number of times that my daughter actually stayed the night with my mom. So she didn't have those motherly instincts, didn't have the grandmotherly instincts. And a few years ago, I started a women's group and you asked me about Reiki. And when I went to Reiki and I really practiced, there was some dark parts of myself I had to heal because are all women evil? No. Mm-hmm. Are all women going to misuse and abuse my trust? No. Are all women going to spill my secrets as soon as I say them to them the way that happened to me with the neighbor? No, that's not going to happen. So I had to work backwards through all these bricks in the wall that I had built over the years. And as I started taking those back brick by brick, because you can say walls crumble, but when you're talking about true healing, it's one brick at a time, because sometimes you have to put that brick back and work on another, right? So I sat and I thought, okay, what is it about my mother that she could not stand up for me? Because there is absolutely no way in this world or any other that if something happened to my daughter, I would not go to war for her. Yeah. And so when I sat with that, what I found, and this is, I'm not big on titles. I'm very proud of my accomplishments. Yeah. But one title I will always wear is a generational trauma breaker.
Yeah.
I'm not a victim. I'm not a survivor. I'm asked to be put in those situations. I didn't. I'm a product of how I was raised. But I sat with that and I found that my mother was abused by her grandfather, which was her mother's father. My grandmother was abused by her own father. So we had this grandfather who was abusing his daughter and granddaughter.
Oh.
My great-grandmother was sexually abused and then abused by her own husband. And so there was no strength. There was no standing up. There was no protection for at least three generations above me. And had I not listened to that 8-year-old voice when it came in, I wouldn't be the Jennifer you see here today, because statistically, I shouldn't be here.
No, you should not.
I'm successful. I'm a business owner. I have a college degree. I've done things in life. And so we cannot stick people in boxes because of something that they've been through.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
And you left out so many incredible things. You are.
Yeah.
You are a warrior.
For sure.
I just have to say, I feel for Tina, because being at one remove like that, there was only so much she could do, but at least she tried to do. And I was actually really angry at your mom until a moment ago. I realized that, what is it? Maya Angelou says, when we know better,
we do better.
But if that's all you grow up knowing, that you can't stop and your mother couldn't stop and her mother couldn't stop, by three generations, why try? There's not even a comprehension of what that would look like.
No.
And I think the maternal piece was abused out of your mom.
Not only abused, but broken and removed.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I have to say, your strength, your incredible consideration in allowing your daughter to try and have a relationship with your mom, in letting her sleep over at all, is just such a testament to the incredible human being you are.
Elaine, the best gift I've ever given my mother. When I started my women's group, I held a one-day retreat. And I called it the healing retreat. And we had just the beautiful day. But there was one part of the day I called the sister circle share. And you could come up and you could share whatever you wanted. But I kicked it off by pulling a chair in front of the room and setting my mom in that chair. And I started with her story of me, because she turned 16 on August 11th and then delivered me 6 weeks early on August 31st. So barely 3 weeks of being 16. And so I talk to those in the room about that. I said, imagine being a 16-year-old mother. You can't even drive yourself to your appointments. You can't drive your daughter to her appointments. You deliver early through an emergency cesarean. And then when I am delivered, I actually passed away first. And so the first sounds she hears of her daughter being born are not that cry. It's the sounds of the beeps of the machines and the pumping to bring back life. And I'm immediately taken from her. She's not allowed to hold me. I am taken to Children's Hospital in Oklahoma City, and she is left in Ada.
Oh my God.
So that maternal bond and connect wasn't even there for her to have.
Yeah.
And then I talked about the things I went through and then the things that she went through. And what I asked that room to do was to pour love into her, because I could imagine how lonely she felt, how dark her days must have been, and how much she must have wished for someone to stand up for her and for someone to tell her they loved her. And as soon as I said that, there came an I love you from over in the corner. And then it was just a ripple or a wave effect where everybody in that room was just telling her how much they loved her and wrapping her. And at that point, it was okay. Yes, we have a past, and yes, we have a story. And I know that as I tell my story, just what you said, experiences, people feel that anger towards my mom. But we have to keep looking. And that's what I talk about. Move it one brick at a time. One brick at a time. Why is she hurt? Because it's no one else's responsibility but my own to work out that relationship with my mother.
You are such a smart cookie. And the truth is, hurt people.
And they don't even know that they do it.
Yeah. And there isn't, in many cases, any intention to hurt. But if that is all you know, then you don't even know you're hurting them.
No.
And yeah, it's
wow.
It's so much to unpack. And you said a little about your accomplished, well, audience, she's hiding her light under a bushel. Jennifer, you are so many things, and all of them incredible. And I just could not love you more.
Thank you. And I appreciate you being here. You and I've had that conversation that I can appreciate where your podcast is going. And though I've not had those thoughts of suicide or suicide ideation, I have had those deep, dark thoughts. I have had those thoughts of what would life be like if I wasn't here? What would my life have been like? Would someone miss me? But here's what I do know is that I would be missed.
Oh, wow.
And it's not what would my life have been like? It is how can my life impact the next person's?
Absolutely. And I know my life is richer for having you here. And that wholeheartedly. I find you very well centered and very comfortable in who you are, but I don't know if you fully appreciate what a gift you are.
I will tell you that has been something that I've been working on.
Good.
It's hard. You almost feel like that. Do I have a right to brag? But it's not bragging. It's
not
really
bragging.
It's ownership. And I recognize that. And I've got women such as yourself that see that light in me, that help turn it on when it's dark in there, or women that loan me their belief and confidence in me when mine's lacking.
And just think of all the women that you've done that for.
Oh, yes.
Including your mom.
Yes.
Life takes some very strange turns. And I often struggled with, when people say, God will never give you more than you can handle. It was something I always struggled with, and it was not on my own behalf. My aunt was ill from the time she was 12. She had rheumatic fever, which developed into mitral valve disease. And as an adult, she was a Mensa member. She was an absolute genius, but she never was able to really progress in her job because she never managed to work a full month without collapsing or having a heart attack or breast cancer, and a million things went wrong. And it was always on her behalf and on behalf of the mentally challenged children that I work with growing up that I used to think, that's just not fair. God, you're not fair. You're just not fair. But I think over the years, I've learned not to swallow it whole, but to understand there's a lot more than I understand. Mm-hmm. And I'm willing to give that leeway because I see a lot more good than bad in people having faith.
Yes.
You are a Yusui Reiki master. You are a Karuna Reiki master. You are a beautiful human being. You have a family, your mom and a grandma and a wife and mother. And by virtue of all of that, what's next? What is it you want to attain next? Because I don't think you're done becoming.
I am not done. I am a learner by heart. In fact, that's what got me through most of my childhood, was just nose down in the books and keep going. So I will probably be a lifelong student of whatever is piquing my interest at the moment. I love all things energy related. We talked about Reiki. I work with crystals and chakras. I'm a sound, you can say sound healer. Yeah. Yeah. So singing bowls, tuning forks,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, I got my birthday money recently and I'm like, yes, I can get my Koshi chimes now. And
oh, wow.
So I'm constantly doing those things, but currently I am in massage therapy school. That is something that is another form of healing that allows me to put hands on and really offer that space again, because you said it, a lot of times people hear what we do and that's woo. We don't understand how you can have comfort when there's not massage going on.
Yeah.
So massage therapy is what's on my plate now, but I do consulting as well, leadership development and training. So anything that is working with people, I'm all for it. As I have my own podcast and we share stories of overcoming and thriving. And so my greatest passion and my gift will always be to offer that space for you to come in and heal however you need to heal, whether it's through storytelling, whether it's through massage, whether it's through Reiki. I have a retreat business, whether it's coming and joining one of our retreats. I am just creating this space in my community for you to come and heal.
And doing a wonderful job at it, I might add. I honestly say the one thing to the audience, the one thing that is most evident to me and something that I have looked for my whole life because it's not part of my life on a day-to-day, and that is you have such a beautiful, calming energy. Like it speaks to my chaos. And don't get me wrong, audience, I'm quite happy in my chaos. I have finally tuned it to be able to live there quite willingly. But it's enticing. It's like you smell a perfume and it's a very intoxicating scent. It may not be right on you, but that doesn't make the scent any less beautiful. And that's how I feel about your calming energy. I think it's just absolutely wonderful. So I always ask my guests, if you would leave our audience with a little tip or a tweak that they can use in their daily life that could be beneficial.
Yes. So the first thing I do every morning is I pray and set my intention. I use Palo Santo. My husband is deathly allergic to sage, so no sage in our home. So I use Palo Santo and just clear my space, clear my thoughts, and what am I doing for the day? And so I encourage you to do that, because when you set your intention, you own your power. You get to make the choice of how your day is going to go. And you're going to have bumps along the way. I had somebody almost rear-end me this morning on a way to a meeting.
Ooh.
That's okay. In my mind, it was, I can get really mad. I can do these things. But you know what? What if their wife is in that car about to have a baby?
Yeah.
What if their family member is at the hospital and they're trying to get there? So I don't let those small things interrupt me anymore. You said it, look for the good. The more that you see it, the more that you will see it.
Yeah.
So set your intention, look for the good. And at the end of every day, I know some people aren't journalers or writers. And my husband and I have this conversation. Tell me three good things that happened today. It doesn't have to be big. Last week, I was thankful that a meeting I was in, the woman had some tissues. Right? So I'm glad that she had that, because I thought I was going to have to pull the little kindergarten sleeve wipe. So find gratitude even in the smallest things, and your joy will increase.
That's absolutely so true and so wonderful. Thank you so much. I was going to wait till we were off camera to say this, but I'm not now. I love the fact that you are so calm. You can take yourself out of reacting. I think that's wonderful. But I want to give you and the audience something I was given by my spiritual mentor. She taught us, when you get in the car or on the bus or in a plane or whatever, you're going to cover yourself in your car. You can cover the whole car with a beautiful golden net. Yes. It's fine filaments. It's absolutely beautiful, but it's just a very light covering that protects you and all inside. And I can honestly tell you that has saved my butt a million times. And that way, I don't even have to get to any reactions that I have to fight off.
Right.
And it becomes such an automatic thing. I don't even think about it anymore. I've been doing this since 2004. And like you, I live in a place that has seasons, and we have like major seasons. In winter seasons, we get 10, 12 feet of snow. I'm like, it's a lot. But I have spun out and danced. My Mustang danced with the truck, and neither one of us had a scratch. And my son was in the car. He was about 12 at the time. I put my arm across him. He had a seatbelt on, but I put my arm across him. And I said, sweetheart, just close your eyes. There's nothing I can do. We hit black ice on the highway. And when we finally stopped on either sides of this highway, the truck driver came over and he said, never in my life has time slowed so much? I thought we were going to be, and he's the one that used the term dance, in that dance forever. And it was so bizarre because everything was moving so slow. And I just knew it would be okay. Which was, the car was all jacked up because there was snow in the wheel wells. And it took a while to get that fixed. But all in all, we never had a scratch on us. So I advocate for the golden net.
I will do it.
Every opportunity, yes. And I always offer it to the people I care about. And that's absolutely my audience and my guests. And I just, God, I have to say thank you so much for entrusting us with your story, for entrusting me to be, I can't even think of the word now, but be open to learning to forgive your mom. Because I didn't realize how important that is. Important for you, but important for those that hear difficult stories.
Yes.
And many of our stories on this show can be oh so difficult. But you're absolutely right. We talk about looking for the good at the end of every day. Let's look at for the good in everybody too.
Yes.
So thank you so much, Jennifer Rogers, for joining us. My day is complete. I just want you to know that.
Thank you.
I'm Elaine Lindsay. This is Suicide Zen Forgiveness. And as always, make the very best of your today, every day. And we're going to see you next time. Bye for now.
Thank you for being here for another inspiring episode of Suicide Zen Forgiveness. We appreciate you tuning in. Please subscribe and download on your favorite service and check out SZF's YouTube channel or Facebook community. If you have the chance to leave a 5-star rating or review, it'd be greatly appreciated. Please refer this to a friend you know who may benefit from the hope and inspiration from our guests. Suicide Zen Forgiveness was brought to you by the following sponsors. Trul Social Media, the digital integration specialists. Let them get you rocking page one in the search results. Canada's keynote humorist, Judy Kroon, motivational speaker, comedian, author, and stand-up coach at Second City. Judy has been involved for over a decade in the City Street Outreach Program in Toronto. Do you have a story to share? Do you know someone you think would be a great guest? Please go to SZF42.com. And for our American listeners, that's SZF42.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again. Through the pain.